And now, back to Slater and Marjo in the morning on Live 95.9.
All right, 9:15 in the morning. You know, I didn't plan on this, and this is what I love about the medium of radio. Berkshire County City Music Station, 95.9, 8:45 in showers today, and a high of 54, cloudy too. All right, so, well, we had author Tyalan Jackson on the show. He's still here. And we got into a very important Black Lives Matter discussion because I just think it's important. I just do. He was explaining his question on the air was, why is it always a deadly force? You know, the first option, underlying racist tones within the police departments. Yet, and I said, have you ever asked a police officer this question about their training? And he said no. So Darren Derby was listening, Officer Darby. And he said he was on his way down to the radio station. So we have, I have a radio. My hands are shaking right now because of the importantness of this conversation that's about to happen live on the air.
Importance.
I mean, what did I say?
Importantness.
Did I say importance? I can't even speak. All right, so.
His hands are clammy.
Right. My hands are all sweaty. Tyalan Jackson, a black man. Darren Derby, a white police officer. Take it away, guys.
First of all, I just want to say before anything, when I think of police officers and I think of great men doing great work, yours is the first name. I shouldn't say God forbid, the only name. I don't know that many police officers, but what you do in the community is not only stellar and necessary, you are a huge role model to this community. I thank you for being you, because what you do is I know there's no agenda for you. You're doing this because it's in your heart and soul. You've helped me personally, you've helped me professionally, and you've helped this community in so many ways. And I first, before we say anything, want to acknowledge the great work that you do because of the good man that you are.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Now let's get ready to rumble.
Absolutely. So it was on my way here, and you know, we had touched base before we went on the air that all I heard was, hey, have you asked the police officer that? And your response to on the radio was, I have not. So I kind of zoomed down here not knowing what I was getting myself into, but you know, as listening prior to getting in my car, I knew it was about race and about stereotyping and whatnot. So I'm open ears. I can answer as honestly as I can. And
so here are some of the questions that I have. And this was a big one that Brian had asked. Because being a police officer, it's such a tough job today.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a tough job. It's always been a tough job.
It's a different job than it was before.
But now it's a different job, just because of the perception of what social media has done to so many police officers, some unjustly, some not. My question is that when there is a police officer that you're an associate with, a colleague of your brethren, and you see them targeting people of color, you see them prejudicially saying things derogatory about people of color, where you can see blatantly that they are treating different people of color differently than they should, than you would. What happens in that precinct? What is the culture there? And I would love for you to be candid, because I know that racism is built, it's in the DNA of all of us, whether we like it or not. It's in me, it's in you. I look at you differently because you're white, then you look at differently than I'm black. It's just in our DNA. We can say we don't see color, it's all BS. Because Brian just said, if I see three white people walking down the street, I'm going to feel differently than if I see three black people walking down. It's just how we are. And you know what? I do it too. And we all do it. But when we have officers of the law who are built to protect and serve, and they don't have that perception, and they look at, and I'm not saying you, but I'm generalizing and saying, when police officers are treating people differently and other police officers don't stand up, I have a problem with that.
And I'll be as candid as I can and honest. I have not, in my career, seen that from my colleagues based on race. Have I seen some other things that were kind of inappropriate or borderline? Yup, I've called them out, pulled them over, and said, hey, listen, that's enough. You know, because we've all got short straws, and if that's the reason behind it, then whatever. But I don't tolerate it when I'm on my calls. That doesn't happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen within the police department as a whole or all police departments.
Of course.
But I have to be honest with you. I have not seen that from fellow officers, whether they're white or black or male or female, specifically target people because of their person of color. I have not.
I'll tell you, and I certainly cannot give names, but I know people who work for the city of Pittsfield in different capacities, have been, and people of color, and have been called the N-word to their face by superiors. By superiors called the N-word to their face. I'm not trying to negate what you just said, but I'm telling
you. That's disheartening.
It is disheartening.
And you can see the look on my face. That is disheartening.
Yeah. Racism is so blatant and prevalent in every city in this country because, again, it is in our DNA. And the problem is that sometimes we don't see it. And I think the bigger problem is that many of us don't have to see it because we don't have to see racism because of who you are. I'm sorry. Whites are just privileged. And maybe this is unfair to say, and maybe I'm going to get smack over this, but if you and I have the same credentials and we look and stare just the same and we apply for the same job, chances are you're getting that job because of based on your skin color. That is just the reality of America in which we live.
And is that based on statistics? Is that based on personal experience?
It's based on the fact that we have to have affirmative action. The fact that we have to have it says that there's a problem. There would be no need to have it if we were solely treated equal. But the fact that we have to have laws like the Rooney Law, bringing it to sports, saying, well, you have to interview a person of color as a head coaching job. That the fact that we have to have that says, yes, that is, I don't have statistics.
Or when businesses say they're an equal opportunity employer.
The fact that they have to say that tells you that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't have the stats, but the fact that these things exist tell you that there is a problem.
Can we swing it towards social media now in the videos? Because police officers get a lot of flack for responding, being called untrained, and like Marjo said, and I second that with an exclamation point. People jump to conclusions. Period. End of story. Right away. Go ahead.
One of the things I'd like to say is that why does it appear that lethal force appears to be the first option in so many of these instances where I don't see someone using their taser, someone using their training. And I know there's a tremendous amount of training that police officers do so that lethal force is the last option. But when a black man, and I do have the statistics for this, that are 4.5 times more likely, an unarmed black man is 4.5 times more likely to be shot by a police officer than an unarmed white man. And the fact that that's an issue says, what is happening here? I think we are built in our DNA to look at people of color as dangerous, to look at people of color as the enemy. And the fact that that statistic is what it is shows that there is a systematic embedded problem, not just in the police officers of America, but in America itself. And until we tackle this and deal with this, we're going to continue to perpetuate this problem. Just to piggyback off where I was, start my first question, what is it in the training that can be used for police officers to not use lethal force, whether it's tasers or your training or whatever the case is, so that we stop killing these unarmed black men?
As we spoke to, and that was a long, sorry. I have to kind of, my brain doesn't work that fast. So, we talked during the break and we talked about our training. We talked about the videos that are out there. We talked about how social media kind of only shows a small portion of what's going on. We as the general public and humans, we don't want to see police officers going up and shaking hands and, hey, how you doing? They want to see the gory stuff. That's why we're attracted to horror movies and crash scenes. We got to keep looking at it, even though there's, the grotesque things. So the public, their general outlook on police right now is obviously, hey, all they do is go around and shoot black people that are unarmed, which is, I've been in the job 15 years, to me is 100% negative.
Absolutely.
That's not what we do. That's just what is being shown in the public now. I watched a video on social media this morning, which I hate watching videos because you don't know where the statistics come from, but here it is showing that, hey, that you're more likely to be hit by lightning than you are to be shot by a cop, and whether you're black, it was less than if you were white. But so you don't know what to believe. You go by FBI statistics, but if the police departments don't give the proper statistics based on the call for service, you don't know. So you don't know where these statistics come from. And are they from 2013 versus up to 2016, where from 13 to 16 we've seen more social media outrage over blacks being shot by whites versus black on black crime and whatnot. I'm not educated enough to really get into the nitty gritty, but that's I didn't sign up for this job 15 years ago to go out and shoot a black man. I didn't sign up for this job to shoot anybody. And if I ever have to, I don't know how I would live with myself. And because you're not only going to be ridiculed by your immediate public, you're now going to be ridiculed by millions of people that are now going to harass you and say, hey, you made the wrong choice, now you're going to go to prison, where we judge people before anything's Absolutely. Even. And that's sad. That is sad. And I understand why the public wants to see video of police officers involved shootings, but you have to let the justice system to work. There was appeal process. So if I show you a video of what happened last night and you're a potential juror, what are you going to think 6 months down the road from now, or a year or 2 years, when it actually comes, hey, I remember that and this is the video, and that's not what the prosecutor said, or that's not what the defense attorney said. So you can't tarnish those possible jurors as well. So I think that we as the public, we want to see stuff instantly. We want to see it now, and that's what
breaking come to news, a conclusion.
Right, and come to a conclusion.
Hang
it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And it's sad. Listen, I'll be the first one. Hey, I'll wear a body cam. It doesn't bother me. I'd rather be proven that I'm innocent than proven that I'm guilty. And if I did something wrong, then okay, then I'll take the punishment. But
yeah, I think one of my problems is that, you know, and you bring up body cams, which is a great point, that there are police officers, I think, in a city in Iowa, that when they pull someone over, they lift up the hood of their car so that the camera inside the car can't see what they're doing. Yes.
Okay, haven't seen that one.
I'm happy to share it and show it to you. And I know this is one particular instance, and I shouldn't compartmentalize it this way, but we were just talking about a YouTube video where we saw a black man, and it was actually a Middle Eastern man who looked white in a suit, who were fighting. After 30 seconds of fighting, police officers came, and they pulled the other guy, to the side, and they took the black man, and they pushed him to the ground and threw cuffs on him. No, they were both fighting. You couldn't tell who instigated it. In fact, it was the black guy who was getting his butt kicked. But yet, it was the white guy, the Middle Eastern guy, who was pulled to the side and just say, hey, what's going on here? And it was the black guy who was tackled to the ground. I think that not only is that an example of white privilege, it's an example of our mindset in America. That when we instantly see, and just like Brian said, and I thank you for being that honest,
yeah,
is that when you see people of color walking towards you, you feel differently than when you feel white people walking towards you. And that has to trickle down to our police system. Because it's in our DNA as Americans. That's who we are. Where this country was conceived in hate and despair and racism and bigotry. It was conceived that way. And it just, civil rights just ended in my lifetime. I was born in the 60s. That bill was signed in the 60s. And the people who were against that bill had children, and those children are our lawmakers today. And that's why laws like Stand Your Ground still exist. That's why laws like Three Strikes still exist. That's why the thing that you said, black on black crime, I think is a perfect, perfect thing to say. Because the media has perpetuated this horrible thing of saying black on black crime. Black on black crime is a huge problem in the black community. There is no disputing that, not at all. In fact, 89% of all black people in America are killed by other black people. Here's my question. Do you realize what the percentage of white on white crime is? In fact, have you even heard the phrase white on white crime? Probably not.
Nope.
The percentage of white on white crime is 81%. For blacks, it's 89%. For whites, it's 81%. Is there really that big a difference? Yet we've all heard in this room, and every person listening has heard that term, black on black crime. You've never heard the term white on white crime. Yet the percentage points is only a few percentage points differently, because it's in our DNA to look at people of color differently, suppress them, and be able to use that as excuses to treat them differently, to not hire them, to suppress them, to give them poor education, and I could go on and on, and I think that's part of the reason it's in our DNA for us to be looked at differently. Whether you're whether you're a civilian or a police officer, you look at people of color differently, and that's why we're seeing the level of racism that we are today from people of authority. And I'm not saying everyone. I'm 98% of the cops in America, I sure, are the most upstanding of all citizens. But the fact that 2% are a problem, and the other 9% aren't angry about it. That's my problem.
It's not that we're not angry, but when you have unions, you have associations, you have all these, you can't, there's certain things that you can't control. Can we put a stop to it by informing those officers that are involved in that? Listen, that's not tolerated. Knock it off. Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll be the first one to call you out if I feel that you're doing something based on race, sex, it doesn't matter, and that's not comfortable with me. I took an oath. My oath is to protect everyone, not a certain race or a certain sex. So I find that, and like I said, when you're talking about that, it's very disheartening to hear that I try to stay off of social media as much as I can when it comes to videos and statistics and stuff like that, because you'll have that statistic, and then tomorrow there'll be another statistic.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, what do we believe? We only believe what is in social media.
I think you see people of color up in arms and angry because you see that their people, our people, and really I say our people, I mean all of us. I don't care what color you are. When you see injustice done to someone, it's done to all of us. The problem is, one of the problems, in my opinion, is that people of color are saying this, we're angry. Stop doing this stuff. Stop killing us. We don't see the men in blue and the women in blue standing up and having that same fervor. We don't see them standing up and saying, this is wrong, we have to do something about it. We don't see it. And maybe we're sticking our head in the sand, and maybe there are officers who are shouting this from the rooftops and saying, there's this horrible injustice done, and yes, people of color are treated differently because they are. Stop and frisk doesn't exist on Park Avenue. Stop and frisk only exists in Brownsville, Brooklyn. It doesn't exist, and the moment that it does exist on Park Avenue, I guarantee you it'll stop. But that's just and that's the problem, and until we are in a better position, until we can have this discussion. Thank you. We are having this discussion.
Absolutely.
How do you fix this? You fix this by having this discussion.
Love is in the air.
But you also fix this by standing up for your fellow person, because injustice done to one is injustice done to all. If a white person sees a black person being treated wrongly, that white person needs to stand up and yell and scream and do something about it. And black people of color need to do the same. When we see injustice done to anyone, white, black, green, yellow, we have to stand up for one another, because the reality is this. We are all one race, and it is human. And until we acknowledge that we love each other as human beings and start separating ourselves by race, by gender, by color, by ethnicity, by religion, we're going to continue to have these issues.
Now, I want to talk about training, right? Because there's a lot of misinformation about, you know, you said what black men are, four times more likely, or, you know, whatever. We want to know what goes in when you approach a car. You know what happens. We got to take a break, though. We're gonna get into it, because I need, you know, Ty has spoken, said his piece, and I need your rebuttal, so to speak. Yeah. Coming up next at 9:02, it's 95.9 Slater and Marjo in the morning.
And now back to Slater and Marjo in the morning on Live 95.9.
All right, 9:13 in the morning. This radio show has just blown up. This morning we had Ty Allen Jackson on. He's still here, actually, to talk about Reed or Else and his book Danny Dollar hitting the big stage at the Colonial Theater. And I made the mistake, not really, of asking him about Colin Kaepernick. And then it turned into a huge discussion about Black Lives Matter and no, Blue Lives Matter, no, White Lives Matter, and social media and how people jump to conclusions. Oh my God, that cop just shot that unarmed black guy for no reason. Oh my God, we're rioting in the streets, we're flipping cars, we're looting places. Ah! Misinformation everywhere. Darren Derby decided to show up and have a little discussion with Ty Allen Jackson, which I thought is a great thing, because Ty Allen Jackson is a black man. Darren is a white cop. And this conversation went on and on and on and on. A very important conversation, very timely and topical conversation. We'll bring it to the local level right here, folks. Because the good things that Darren Derby is doing in the community with driving around and Hoops Not Crimes and candy for the kids, he's changing the perception of how people view the police. Because, tell me that story that you just told Darren, Ty, a second ago.
So, and I think I've talked to the chief about this before. It was right after Ferguson. It was right after, it was Newtown. We started going into the schools, started going to the elementary schools. And I think Ferguson, it was right around the time right after Ferguson. I'm in Morningside School, and I have this young black child that came up to me he's 5 years old in kindergarten, and we're chatting with the kids, and they're all having a good time. I get to the next table. Hey, what's going on, fellas? What's, you know, how's your weekend? And one of them gives me that, you know, that stare down look, like he's like angry at me. And I'm like, man, what's going on, buddy? And he's like, my father told me not to talk to police officers because you shoot black people with their hands up. Now, this is a 5-year old in kindergarten saying that to a police officer in uniform. You know, and it was that was my breaking point. That was the point that I said, this can't continue. This is awful. So from that point on, every single day, I went to that school, to that table, to that child, and just kind of just interjected myself into him, you know, just like sat at the table, hey, what's going on, and showing him that's not who we are, you know, and where does a five-year-old get that from, you know? And I talked to Ty, it's two places, parents or TV, you know. So it's, but at 5 years old, you should not even be thinking about that. So,
you know, I want to piggyback off that and say that's almost a great example of what it's like to be a black person in America. Because the stereotype that I receive as a black man is not much different than the stereotype you receive as a police officer. I go online at the supermarket and women in front of me clutch their bags a little tighter. I walk across the street and a white person is walking towards me, they cross the street. It's the exact same thing, except I deal with that every single day, whether I don't have a uniform on, so it's distinct whether or not I'm a police officer or not. I'm black 24/7, 365, and I'm treated as such, and I experience racism in some form or fashion, major or minor, every single day. So I can completely empathize with exactly what it is that you've gone through, but it's also a microcosm of what's happening in this culture and the perception of what it means to be black in America and to be a police officer.
And I can understand that, because shortly again, after Ferguson, after the big blow up, that I'm driving around, or we're driving around in police cars wearing a police uniform. We're a police officer 24/7. Everybody knows who we are, whether it's a restaurant, bar, diner, doesn't matter. The looks that you get every single day,
right,
is, ah, you know, he's crooked. And that's awful. And that takes a toll. That takes a toll too. So,
Chief, when did you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
So, one of the positive parts about law enforcement culture is you can always depend or rely on backup. So I heard Darren on the radio. And, good job. Thank you for that, by
the
way.
Thanks
for volunteering for that. But, so I thought it might come up. And I want to follow up on what Ty and Darren both just said, because I'm pleased that Ty made that connection and that Darren recognizes it. So one of the things I do at the police academy is teach the intro block to cultural diversity. And I use that example in the block, and I tell all of the students, regardless of where they're from, what their experiences are, what they look like, you know, if you don't think you've ever experienced discrimination, congratulations, but stand by, because for the rest of your life, for the rest of your career, wherever you go, you're blue. And everybody, whether you grew up with them, whether you came from the same neighborhood with them, whether they're from the hood, will now look at you that way first. I've been using that example for years. Ironically, I was away at training for a couple of days, and in response to some of the stuff that just came, there just occurred in Charlotte. The Charlotte branch of the NAACP made a statement, and they basically said, many black police officers are no longer black, they're blue. It was hurtful, and it was heartbreaking, because like Ty said, I can take my uniform off, I can take my badge off, I can go to another community. I can't change my skin color.
Did you want to weigh in on that, Ty or Darren? Because that was actually well said.
No, I mean, he's right. I mean, and like I said, it doesn't matter where I go, whether I'm with my family or friends or whatever, like, oh, that's a cop, you know, and eyes are always on us, no matter where you go. And so I guess I feel a little bit of that, but probably not to the extent, and I probably will never understand, but know that we, as those who wear the uniform in whatever color skin you are, no matter where you go, eyes are always on us. So if I do something wrong, it's not this small, it's now this small, which to me is unfair, but that's the life I chose, and that's the career, the path that I want to take. So.
Ty, you've said over and over again on this show that you want to see police officers standing up for their fellow comrades who are bad. And the chief had a really good answer for that question. And he, you know, in fact, he said, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but you said they are. They do report it. But there's a reason why we don't see it. And what is that reason?
So I think we're actually looking at two different elements. One is Ty's statement. We want to see police officers, we want to see police executives stand up and be more vocal. And I think that's something that we as an industry are working on. We're bad at telling our own good stories and advancing our own positions. We don't have experience in that. In Massachusetts, we've been working on it really hard for the last couple of years through social media, through the chiefs associations. So we're gaining some ground, and we've done some great work in Massachusetts to stand up and draw the line and hold people accountable. But the other part is the individual instances that we were talking about on the break. And, you know, Darren said, I've pointed issues out with my colleagues, or, you know, I've called people out. But the point that I made, that many people don't don't understand is that if an individual officer holds another individual accountable and we get into the internal system, the accused officer also has rights. And as the agency and as the agency head, I not only have to hold the standard to hold the individual officer accountable, but I have to protect their rights, which means in many cases, the details aren't going to be disclosed until everything is over and the personnel matters are wrapped up. And people don't like that. There's issues around that surrounding transparency, but the personnel laws are going to have to be addressed before. That's not a decision that we can just make. You know, we've got this problem and we're going to share it widely. We can't, because that individual officer also needs to be protected by the agency and by the law.
So how do we conclude this? We conclude it with a ride along.
Yeah! There you go. So let's put Ty on blast here. So I've offered him a ride along to see what it's like, you know, for a few hours or 8 hours or however much he can handle, and so he accepted, and we'll see what happens.
And I'm remarkably excited to do so, and I was shamed a little bit for not have suggesting it sooner, but now that the opportunity and invitation has been extended, I'm looking forward to being your sidekick for the day and seeing a little bit of what it is that you go through on a regular basis. And but with that being said, I said this off the break, I believe every single police officer is a superhero, and I admire what they do tremendously for protecting us and keeping us safe.
This is amazing. I know you're going to say it.
There's what? No fist fight. There's no nothing.
No, yeah, I mean, just, right. We got a black guy and a white cop. They're not fighting. I mean, this is amazing.
But see, I
well, now I have to, and something in between.
And a black chief.
But see, I'm not going to the side here, but I just see us all as just men. I see him as a beautiful, bald, black man, but...
He is. He's good looking.
You're darn right. That's right, baby. Hey.
Chief's got to shave, though.
So. I know Marge is going to say, what are you, jealous that you're going to ride along?
No, so, I was going to say we can broadcast from the back seat.
All right, Slater and Marjo in the morning, a very important conversation. This thing just kind of blew up out of nowhere, but I want to thank everyone for their honesty and their stones for coming on the radio and saying what needs to be said. Author Ty Allen Jackson and Officer Darren Derby and Police Chief Michael Wynn on Slater and Marjo in the morning, Berkshire County City Music Station, live 95.9. We'll take a short break.